This morning, I wanted to talk a little bit about the poet Ryokan. I'm not a scholar or anything like that, but he came to mind in a conversation I was having recently. It was a nice little story, which I just realized was associated with his most famous haiku, as they say. So I'll read this story, and then we'll talk a little bit about it, and try to weave in some other things. But so the story is called Gifts for the Robber, and it comes from a book, the title of which escapes me, children's book. Sorry. Sorry to the person who wrote the book. Ryokan is one of the best-loved poets of ancient Japan. He was also a Buddhist monk. He lived as a hermit, very simply, all alone in a small mountain hut. He wrote short, lovely poems about his lonely life, nature, and the children in the nearby village that he loved to play with. A begging bowl, a monk's robe, and a book or two were all he owned. One afternoon, when Ryokan was away in the village, a thief arrived at his hut. But much to his dismay, there was truly nothing to steal. As the thief lingered, considering the situation, he didn't hear the returning footsteps of Ryokan. When the door suddenly opened, the thief's surprised and guilty expression told Ryokan the whole story. Nevertheless, the monk warmly welcomed him. "Oh, sir," Ryokan bellowed cheerily, "what kindness. You have traveled a great distance to visit me." He grabbed the man's hand and shook it enthusiastically. "I could never allow you to leave without some show of my hospitality. I must find a proper gift for you." But they both looked around the bare hut and knew there was no gift to give. The thief awkwardly backed up toward the door, trying to take his leave, but Ryokan brightened with an idea. He began to disrobe quickly. "Ah, I have it. Don't go yet. Here's something for all your trouble," the monk suggested. "Please, take my clothes. I apologize for such a meager gift. It seems to be all that I can offer right now." Sorry. The thief, feeling very sheepish indeed, could do nothing but accept the clothes Ryokan placed in his arms. Wondering if this monk wasn't truly crazy, the thief reached... I'll explain this in a minute, so sorry. Reached for the door and quickly escaped into the night. "Be sure to visit again soon," Ryokan shouted after him. Then the monk sat down beside his window, overlooking the mountains. As the evening sky above darkened to indigo, the east light lightened to bronze. Soon a huge golden moon slipped over the mountain ridge. Ryokan, naked and shivering, sat contentedly. He watched for a long while as the spectacular moon ascended the sky. "Poor man," he mumbled to himself. "I gave him such worthless things. If only I could give him this wonderful moon." He then wrote his most famous haiku. Come on. The thief left it behind, the moon at the window. Sorry, I'm a little tired. When I get tired, anyway. So this is an interesting story. It's kind of funny as you appreciate it, and I appreciate the humor of it as well. But there's something else going on here, which I think is really important for us to kind of think about and consider. For me personally, as a monk, the Bodhisattva vows are really important, training for the benefit of others and myself. And in that capacity, I find myself doing all manner of jobs and work and helping people in various ways. Oftentimes, the reason this story came to mind is a colleague and I were talking about someone and who has had a lot of frustration, let's put it like that, in terms of their expectations of organizations and other people and that sort of thing, and has suffered a great deal from that. We are geared in our culture to look outward to things, to look outward to fixing things, to finding the solution to our problems by fixing it, rebuilding it, changing it, changing external circumstances. And to a great extent, this is quite helpful and has been quite beneficial for many of us. And still, there comes a point, and again, so for myself, the Bodhisattva vows are important. I'm really quite enthusiastic about helping people. I'm fixing things and rebuilding things and doing all that stuff. It's really something that's quite valuable to me. And in my personal life and as a monk, there was a point where I came to the realization that the world was not going to be able to be fixed. Good, you understand the humor of that. And so we're left with what the Buddha taught, that suffering exists. It just exists. How do we live in a world in which suffering just exists? And that is what Ryokan is talking about that thief. We're all, in a sense, that thief when we spend our effort and time looking at making the world perfect, changing external circumstances to suit us. And like Ryokan, we're just really keen to help in that way as much as we can. I mean, he was sincere. Oh, let me help you on various levels. But Ryokan knows there is the moon as well. And this is why we practice. This is the essential matter for which we practice. Not to make ourselves perfect, not to make the community perfect, not to make our lives and other people perfect, but so that we can find the moon and know that thing, to find that thing. And it is, so relative to the person that we were talking about, it is a source of sadness for us when we encounter someone who continually bashes themselves against that wall of trying to fix things externally and misses the opportunity to find the moon. There's a great sadness in that. This is not an easy idea to grapple with and something very uncommon in the world. There's another poem which I have bookmarked there in which Ryokan says, true understanding of the mind is a rare thing in the world. In a sense, coming to Shasta Abbey, this is the meaning of coming to Shasta Abbey for me, that I come here because here is a group of people, a community dedicated to preserving the idea, the practice, the reality of giving expression to that moon, giving expression to the deeper matter. And all of you, everybody here, participates in that activity. Everybody who comes to the Abbey and supports it, who does this practice, is, in some sense, making their way toward knowing what that moon is, toward experiencing it, giving expression in your daily life. Master Jiu kind of had this thing that she would say, be content to know the cosmic Buddha. And I would think of that, I would hear that, and I would think, you know, well, that's fine for someone who knows the cosmic Buddha, but what about me? And while I could still say that, I have come to understand there's a kind of remarkable thing about our Soto Zen tradition and the teaching that Dogen passed on to us, which is he's saying, do the practice, be content with the practice. That is the expression of enlightenment. That is the mind of the Buddha. When we let go of whatever it is that we're kind of, you know, worked up about and just sit still, just be content to do the practice, that is being content with the cosmic Buddha. That is being content with Buddha nature. When we simply engage in the practice, we are giving expression to the Dharma, to the truth, to the moon of Buddha nature. There's a way in which you can read about Ryokan, and you can kind of think, oh, wow, he was this hermit, he was kind of a crazy, fun-loving guy, he drank a lot of sake, you know, that sort of thing. And you can kind of set up an idealism about him and a bit of envy. I want his life. Envy is a really bitter and dangerous thing to allow to fester in your heart. Because it's basically, and it has really nothing to, I mean, it's problematic in a community when, you know, that has its significance. But in terms of our own heart, it has a very insidious quality because it's basically undermining your own Buddha nature. It's basically saying, I am not good enough, and therefore I want something outside of myself. So we can look at Ryokan and think, wow, I want that life. I want to be a hermit and get away from the community. Get away from these people who are bothersome. But that's just a little bit of envy. And we don't really see what Ryokan is pointing at. The moon that we have right now is satisfactory. And when we put the teaching into practice right now, in this moment, the community that we have is satisfactory, and that we are adequate right now. We are adequate right now. Even though we have, you know, whatever it is that we have. We are adequate right now. So, in some sense, we become Ryokan for ourself. And for my, when I look at my mind, there's all kinds of people living up here, different characters that are doing various things, and oftentimes in conflict. And in some sense, there's a Ryokan that lives in there, and in some sense, there's a thief. And most of the time, it seems like the thief is somewhat dominant, because he's kind of looking for stuff that he wants. And so in a sense, we have to be Ryokan. We have to be the one who reminds us. Remember, look for the moon. Really look at what we're doing here. When we start thinking, but that's not fair. It may not be fair. I'm not trying to say that it isn't. But that there's a little slippery slope there where we fall down into envy. And we can decide to go a different way with it. Sometimes we may see injustice and unfairness and we need to take some step. But remember the moon. Remember not to be the thief. So hopefully you won't feel jilted or stinted or whatever the proper word is. I think that's about what I have to say. So I'll close with another of Ryokan. I make my home deep in the forest. With each passing year, the green creepers advance. Here, no worldly troubles intrude. Now and then I hear a woodcutter singing, basking in the sun, I mend my robes. Gazing at the moon, I recite hymns. A word to you who practice the way. Those who find the meaning of mind are few. So, thank you.